be very open here, but I think I'm prouder of myself and I'm happier inside because I'm chasing this thing, which generally means I'm better to be around. And I can't speak for everybody. A lot of people think that that is the Holy Grail and, you know, the promised land, but I like solving complex problems. And I learned that about myself then. And I'm like, okay, cool. You're happy and you feel fulfilled when you are chasing something that gives you meaning and purpose. So then I asked the question, what is the thing that gives me meaning and purpose?
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this episode of Fresh Perspective, where we take another look at life, like a perspective shift that hopefully will help you go a bit deeper or discover a bit more in terms of your own potential. So with me today is Paul Rouette. Paul, welcome, and thank you for taking out time from your very busy schedule to spend with me and us.
Thanks, Francois. It's great to be here.
So the first question, the opener, is what do you do? Tell us, what keeps you so busy?
I guess first and foremost, I'm a dad and a husband. I've got three wonderful, very busy children, yeah. 8, 6, and 3. Happily married, my wife and I, is a 10-year anniversary in at the end of this month.
Oh, exciting.
Yeah.
So everything booked, ready, set up,
everything
organized.
Everything's booked, but the gift is still on the task list. Oh. So I need to get that done. But I think that's my first and foremost priority. So and it is busy. Those of us who are parents of young children know the wonderful experience it is, and such a rewarding experience, but it's hella busy. There's so much stuff to do.
So maybe we'll spend time talking about your part-time thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm a full-time dad and a part-time entrepreneur.
Yeah.
I'm an entrepreneur as my profession. Have started many different companies. Some have succeeded, some have failed. I've learned a ton in my 20-odd year journey in entrepreneurship. Everything from wine distribution companies to restaurants to an international edtech company, and a lot in between that I won't take the time to mention. And then now I'm busy with a new startup that's purpose driven. We are trying to put the power back in people's hands and allow them to make significant climate action with every transaction, the way that they pay. Climate change is a huge, huge issue. And the more that I had learned about it after we sold our previous business, the more I learned about it, the more I couldn't unlearn. And it really grabbed me, gripped me, because it has to do with the evolution of our species and how I, as a dad, can potentially affect change that my children will feel and feel the effect of when they are big. If I sit around and do nothing, I know that I have done nothing to contribute positively to the change. So we've, you know, it's a big complex problem, and we believe that we've come up with a big, relatively simple solution that is scalable and efficient and cheap for every person in the world to take part in. And that is a currency that holds its value by creating environmental wealth. So every time you spend in the currency, every time you demand the currency, the base value isn't gold or government debt, it's forests, it's the natural world. It's the removal of CO2 from the atmosphere creates the value that you exchange for your coffee and your lunch and your haircut, for example. So we're busy with a proof of concept in Stellenbosch. And we feel that that if you can capture the imagination of a community, one community, You can use that to then capture the imagination of many communities around the world. And if it's easy and cheap and simple to take part in climate action, we want to believe that humans would do the right thing and do that. So I guess it's a platform and a movement, but at its very simple description, it's a currency that removes carbon from the atmosphere.
Man, I love that. I love that. And I don't know why you mentioned haircut when you spoke about how you can actually spend. I can buy a massive piece of forest with my kind of. So I wanna take you back a little bit. You started with you're an entrepreneur. I'd like to hear your take on what an entrepreneur is, and then I want to go deeper into this currency.
Mm. Yeah, so I mean, what is an entrepreneur? It's somebody, I think, who wants to solve problems and gets excited by the more complex the problem, and the more opportunity an entrepreneur sees. And I think that's, for me, it's always been the simplest definition. You know, we can go into long, verbose academic definitions, but for me, it's you see a complex problem and you get excited about solving it, because that is ultimately will align with the purpose of driving through to completion.
And you actually action on that, right? That's an entrepreneur, not just think and get excited about things.
Yeah, and not accepting the status quo. So you see a problem, you get excited about it, and then you get your energy builds as you embrace the complexity, and it's seeking out complexity rather than moving away from complexity.
I like that. Energy builds as you seek the complexity, and you seek out the complexity because you want to what?
You want to solve it.
You want to solve it. You want to simplify it.
You want to simplify it. You want to make it better. You get rewarded accessible. Not by money, accessible. You don't want to. I don't know. My definition has always been monetary rewards are secondary or tertiary, but your primary objective is that feeling of accomplishment if you've solved a complex problem and you've either made things better, easier, cheaper, faster for the people or companies that you want to solve this problem for. Yeah. Because if you're driven by money as an entrepreneur, you're going to have a tough time because, you know, some days you're going to be happy and some days you're going to be like super depressed. So if that's your marker of success, it's going to be a tough time. But if your marker of success is, and the thing that gives you energy is embracing complexity and challenge and growing and solving, then, I mean, that's basically what an entrepreneur does on a daily basis. So, you know, when I hear these things about, you know, start your own business, earn this amount of income, like you're missing the point entirely. You know, A, your time is not free or your own. Your time is, you know, people think that I want to start my own business so I have control of my time. It's like, no. In what world? No.
Definitely.
Yeah, I've often thought maybe I should get a cushy desk job so I can just work 8 hours, you know,
yes,
rather than like 16 hours that you work as an entrepreneur. Yeah.
So, never mind thinking, the mental space it takes up as well.
Yeah, the mental capacity of continuously, fixing things in your head and, the amount of conversations that you have with your spouse or your friends about the work that you're doing because of just these things just bubble up. You know, you're excited about it. You're passionate about it. It's close to your purpose. And then as a result, you just kind of like, it comes into conversation. It's a life commitment. It's not a choice to be free of time pressure. I think it's a different kind of,
I hear what you're saying. It's moving towards something, not moving away from something, you know, I want to, the thing that people sometimes think they are moving towards, either the money or the freedom in terms of time, is often it's not sustainable in terms of keeping the motivation and the drive and the ambition in life, because it ebb and flows, because you quickly realize that, no, you don't have more time now. You have less.
And you don't have more money.
And get paid less.
And if you don't work, you don't get paid.
All right, so let's transition now to what you mentioned about all the other stuff you did, but now you found something and there's purpose behind it. What do you mean by purposeful? What is that?
So I think when I had the space and time to be able to think about what I choose to do next, because often you kind of when you're starting a business, you
the space and time. Sorry to interrupt.
We sold our biggest exit. Lobster Inc. was an educational, an ed tech platform. So we sold it to hospitality brands. We sold our product to hospitality brands. Video training in 23 languages across. At its peak, we were training 2 million people around the world in 23 languages. Across brands like Marriott, IHG, Hilton, Kempinski, the government of Dubai was a client of ours. So we grew to a point where we, for 15 years, we like slogged. Same four partners, and I still maintain relationships with all of them. And we worked really hard, and we decided to sell 100% exit about 3 years ago. And that was a profound moment for all of us. You know, it's like, A, kind of married to your partners, and then all of a sudden you're free. And also somebody replaces your like entire meaning and purpose and identity with a bunch of numbers in your bank account. You know, and you think, and that was a emotionally, it's a big thing. I think a lot of people don't. I think if you hear the story, you think, oh, but you have money, so you're happy, surely.
Yeah.
And then there's that old say. Yeah. You have time and you have money. And I think my understanding of it, I'd always believed that. I'd always been like, yeah, if you have free time and loads of money, your happiness scale must be like off the charts. But then it happened to me and I started to understand that those two things aren't the things that I like doing. You know, I don't like sitting on a beach all day or just doing nothing purposeful. So, and I can't speak for everybody. A lot of people think that is the Holy Grail and, you know, the promised land. But I like solving complex problems. And I learned that about myself then. And I'm like, okay, cool. You're happy and you feel fulfilled when you are chasing something that gives you meaning and purpose. So then I asked the question, what is the thing that gives me meaning and purpose? What is the thing that I want to chase now? And the moment was very clear. I watched a documentary, ironically, on a plane and with my family. We were on an Emirates flight from Dubai, and the documentary was called Drowning in Plastic. And there was a moment when the film started, the documentary started, and it was about seagoing birds in New Zealand and the parents. They're called shearwaters, amazing birds. When they hatch, they don't come back to land until they want to breed, and then they come back to land. But they've evolved to a point where they can, you know, drink water through seawater, like desalinate in their beaks. I mean, phenomenal animals, phenomenal birds. And they were dying in huge numbers because the parents were feeding the chicks plastic because they couldn't differentiate between the shellfish that they eat and pieces of plastic. So these chicks' stomachs were filled up with plastic, and therefore dying. They didn't have the strength to survive. And I cried like an emotional baby. I was like chunking on the plane. I was like, you know, I just felt so embarrassed to be a human that we had caused this. And my wife was like, what's wrong? What's, she was like looking at me. I'm like headphones on, like ugly cry. And she's like, what is going on? Like the kids are like looking at me like, is daddy okay? And I just thought, like, that's the thing. I've got to change. I've got to work to change. And I've got to try my absolute best to change this, to improve the way that humans and nature, humans and the natural world exist together. And the journey into plastic then got me into the bigger problem, which is carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. And I wear this shirt every day. This is our shirts, which this line is the concentration of CO2 in the atmosphere since the 1700s to today.
Oh, I want one. Oh, I want a shirt like that.
What you're seeing now is that's the Industrial Revolution, or the second half of the Industrial Revolution. So, I mean, all the reading and all the studies and all the travel and all the people I've spoken to since then, this was about 3 years ago, it's just confirmed and reaffirmed the situation that humans are in. We have overproduced carbon dioxide because it's free, and we have removed huge tracts of natural land because that is, it's more economically viable to remove natural resources and exploit natural resources than it is to maintain. Mm. So you get a situation where economic growth is doing that and environmental wealth does that. Mm. So they're indirectly proportionate to each other. So the wealth of the environment, let's call it wealth, but the abundance of the natural world declined. Is declining. Mm. And it's ever since we learned how to farm. If you think about it, ever since we walked out of the cave and we thought, hang on a second, we don't have to traverse, we don't have to roam, we don't have to be nomads. We can take this land and we can put a fence around it, we can clear the land and we can farm, and we can domesticate animals. 96% of all animals or mammals on the planet are either humans or domesticated animals. 96%, or 95%. So let's call it 95%. And this is from David Attenborough. The 5% are wild mammals, which tells you what's happened. So what our purpose and vision is to keep economic growth up and to the right, because that won't change. That's the one thing that humans will always pursue. Mm-hmm. Capitalism is a very successful, it's made humans incredibly successful.
Countries are waking up to wait a minute, we can capitalize on nature. Yeah.
Well, this is the point. So how do you create the natural world as an asset? At the moment, it's tourism and it's ecotourism and all that kind of stuff, diversity and but that's small if you think about the greater capitalism world. So what we are saying, what we are saying is, if there's a way, how could you turn a forest into a gold mine? Because people will do anything for a gold mine. Mm. And the simple answer to that is, what if we valued the service that nature provides us, and we take that value, the removal of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere, we take that value and we base money off it. In the same way of digging gold out of the ground, putting it in a vault and basing money off it. That's the gold standard. We up until 1971, that was the way that we created money. Mm. And what if we do the same with CO2 removals to carbon credit certificates? Use that as the asset, create money off it. Now, every time you spend money, you're creating more demand for more certificates. If we have more demand for more certificates, we go to forests and we say, please produce more certificates. Mm. And we'll pay you higher prices for it because there's huge demand here. So it all goes around demand. Mm. If humans demand a thing, that thing becomes very successful.
Yeah. Could you please explain the certificate and all of that, how that works? Because most of us don't know anything about that or much about it.
Of course, yeah. So there's a market that started with the Kyoto Protocol. The Kyoto Protocol is the first conference of the parties, the first COP. And so 26, 27 years ago, the world leaders at the time said it would be a good solution to make carbon, the removal of carbon, tradable, so that people can buy those certificates to try and create a more liquid market so that capital can flow into carbon removal projects. So those companies and those individuals who want to remove carbon can easily and efficiently buy carbon removals and support that market. So the original intention was to create demand for carbon removals. The tricky thing in the voluntary carbon market. So today, the voluntary carbon market trades about 700 million tons of carbon. It's very sophisticated in terms of the measure.
Sorry, how much is that? I mean, that's a big number, but how much is it in terms of what needs to happen?
Yeah, so in terms of visualizing, a hot air balloon is about a ton of gas.
Okay.
So if you fill that with carbon dioxide, there's 700 million tons of them. In relation to what needs to happen, so what needs to happen by 2030 is we need to have halved our global emissions or removed. Okay. We've never halved our global emissions. These two blips in atmospheric concentration was 2008 and COVID. These two little tiny little blips. So when the world shut down, it went like, ding. So we're not going to shut down the world again. That's for sure. So we need to remove 25 billion tons because humanity, as a race, we emit about 50 billion tons a year, between 40 and 50 billion tons a year. And that's only increasing. So by 2030, we probably have to remove 30 billion tons every single year. So we need to grow the voluntary carbon market by 30 times at least to have a good chance of hitting our targets. So it's a huge, huge task. But I can tell you what's happened in Stellenbosch over 2 months is, and the numbers are small.
It's since you've launched, right? If you say 2 months, is it since you've launched or what are you?
Since we've launched, yeah. So we launched 2 months ago. We've doubled our user base. So in the last 2 weeks, we doubled. And in the last week, we've doubled. So the rate of users is going up immensely. We bought our first block of assets, which are forestry. So a Makira project. It's called the Makira project in Madagascar. It's an old, beautiful old rainforest that it's a reduced deforestation project. So as the forest is maintained, it's a carbon sink because the forest is always growing and carbon is always being reduced as a result of its growth. And that forest is being expanded by the local communities. Those local communities apply for certificates, and Verra, the largest verification agency, which is like a big four audit firm, you know, like a PricewaterhouseCoopers or whatever, Deloitte, they come in for the voluntary carbon market and they look at the project and they say, okay, there's 100,000 tons that have been reduced as a result of this amount of growth in this project.
Okay.
As an example. So that's how the certificates work. Now, in the Makira project, we've purchased a couple thousand tons from them. We've purchased a couple hundred tons from Groetbos Nature Reserve as a more relevant example. Yeah. So like South Africans will go, okay, cool. I know Groetbos, it's a Fynbos Reserve. Yeah. And they, you know, they basically buy up farmland and regenerate it back to Fynbos, and they protect that area. And as a result, they're removing a lot of CO2 because that area needs to grow. You know, if you clear the land for farming, you're actually doing the reverse. So the positive behavior that we are buying from them is the reduction of carbon dioxide. It's always a bit difficult to think about it because you're buying a reduction. That's the asset. You're not like, you know, we're used to creating something and selling it, not creating a minus, you know. So we try and focus on the certificates that have proved that, yeah, the tree has grown or the Fynbos has kind of flourished in a particular area. We've also bought the credits produced from a wind farm up in Da'ar in the Northern Cape. And why is that a credit? Because the electricity supply is now coming from wind as opposed to burning coal. And in South Africa, that's a very hot topic. And then we're also looking at Stellenbosch Recycling as a very local, like hyper-local source of credits because, you know, people will say my actions here contribute to there and I can go visit the recycling plant and actually see what they're doing. because their efforts of removing trash and paying those paying the pickers, you are incentivizing that. Your money is actually going to further that project in a sustainable way. Why do I say sustainable way? Because all you're doing is buying your lunch and your beer and your after work drinks and going about your daily business.
But paying
with Toko.
Toko.
And Toko.
You didn't mention the name of the currency, Toko.
Yeah. The currency's name is Toko, ton of carbon offset. And also, OCO is the molecular structure of carbon dioxide, one C and two O's. And ton, it's a play on the British pound. Pound is a weight. It's pound sterling, which is a pound of silver, which was the original measure. Dollar is based off the old Germanic thaler, which is equivalent to a pound. The libra is also, it all has references to weights.
Weights
of precious metal. And that's how fiat currency changed things a lot, because now people are thinking fiat currency is government-based currency. Currency created by government debt. And that changed a lot of the perception of what a currency is. It's not based off a certain amount of gold. Some people still think if they take their 100 rand to the Reserve Bank, they'll get the equivalent amount of gold. and that's not the case. You'll get the equivalent amount of government debt of bonds, which doesn't feel like an asset to most people, but it is. Yeah. So ton of carbon offset. And we're trying to make it easy and simple for people to pay using Toko, and then create demand for more projects like reduced deforestation, wind recycling, and soil carbon sequestration, which means storing carbon in soil. So if more of those projects proliferate around the world, then we're in a good place. And we certainly have enough solutions. We have enough scale to really solve this. The thing we don't have is demand for those solutions. We have 170 different types of carbon credits. We have some of the brightest minds in the world coming up with wonderful solutions. We just don't have demand. Mm-hmm. If you think about like AI or the race to space, the space race, this rocketry trend and all the various technology trends, all the brightest minds gravitate to where there's the biggest demand. They solve those problems because the reward at the end is enormous. And the one of the problems with the whole carbon market is that the reward at the end is not enormous, because at the moment in the voluntary carbon market, the companies that are buying these credits buy and retire them. Okay, and I'll explain that now. It's like going to a wine shop, buying a bottle of wine, pouring the wine out the bottle and saying, this is the value. The empty bottle is the value. What does that mean? It means that the quality of that actual wine is not valued at all. And you will buy the cheapest wine. You'll buy the cheapest wine you can find on the shelf because you're just going to pour it out.
Yeah.
So if you're a company that voluntarily wants to be carbon neutral, you emit 100 and you need to buy 100 credits and tear them up so that nobody else can use them again. So the demand signal in the voluntary carbon market is mass as cheap as possible, which means that you're not going to get, if I'm a landowner, if I own a forest, I'm not going to see this as a source of wealth.
No.
And I seek wealth as a human. We all do. So we can't blame people who are deforesting next to the Amazon and thinking, why are they clearing these forests? They're feeding their children. They're doing what we do.
Yeah.
It's just the situation they're in. And we can't say that we would be different. And that's the sad thing about humans, is we can say that they're wrong, but
yeah, we're doing it in different ways, right? With your story about the birds and the plastic, we're also doing that in a different way.
Yeah, 100%. So what Toko does is we hope. So let me use real examples. So we bought our first round of carbon certificates. We created the Toko. The community of Stellenbosch has supported it such that we now the demand has exceeded our expectations, and now we need to go back to the voluntary carbon market and buy our second round of carbon credits. And we've actually done that in like a week ago. And we've already seen, sorry, I'm just getting a call through. We've already seen a huge demand spike, and we'll probably need to go back to the voluntary carbon market and say, hey, we need more.
Mm.
What happens if this demand continues to spike is we will say, we need more. And what happens? The price starts to go up because demand is there, and we buy at the highest quality we can. Why? Because we're basing a currency off it, not because we're pouring it out.
Oh, dear.
So our demand is high quality, high price.
Yes.
And that's the signal that we're sending to the voluntary carbon market. When that signal filters down to project developers, they'll say, you know, hey, we can get fifth. So at the moment, it's like high quality is probably $10 a ton of carbon. Imagine that's 50. Imagine that's 100. And if you look at the history of the gold price, when all of a sudden gold was like tinkering down at the bottom because jewelry was based off it and a few currencies, but then the economies in the world started growing and the gold price just shot up to $2,500. 1971, world goes off the gold standard, gold price comes down significantly. Why was it in such high demand? Because people were spending in it. Basically, it was like an IOU for gold. So if you have a project developer and the carbon price for high quality tons of carbon is $100 a ton, they're going to sit back and say, hang on a sec, maybe this is an opportunity. Maybe we should just protect the forest and we'll get, I can feed my family. I can just protect this, keep this tree, and I'll get paid because there is demand. So
how do people get tokens around? How do you get tokens at the moment?
Yeah, they go to the App Store and they download TOCOS, TOCOS, and they register their email address, they complete security phrase, and they do KYC, so ID and proof of address, and then they buy it. They buy it, well, they exchange the RAND for TOCOS. So you go add on the app, and you populate your wallet with TOCOS. And think about it like spending in a dollar or a pound or a rand or a toko. And then you go to participating merchants. At the moment, there's about 150 in Stellenbosch. And they can go and, we're running great specials next week, Friday, for Green Friday. It's Earth Week next week. So you'll get great specials in and around Stellenbosch, paying in toko as a reward to say thank you for being part of this community. You can go on our website, you can look at all the merchants that we have in town. As I said, that's growing every day. So we're releasing a feature next week, which will allow you to, in the app, see where you can spend it, where you can spend your tokens.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about that. Can you see the merchants that are participating on the app or not yet?
Yeah, okay. Not yet, but next week you will be able to do that. And then, but we have that information on our website. People can follow us on Instagram for all updates and detail around what we're doing. The other thing to mention is if people are concerned about their carbon footprint and like doing the right thing, it's interesting for South Africans to know that their carbon footprint, average carbon footprint of a South African, is between 7 and 10 tons a year. Now that, in terms of tokos, the exchange rate is 180 rand. And it's spending 1,800 rand. Just spending 1,800 rand removes the impact of your carbon footprint. So if you go to lunch and you have take your family to lunch and you spend in toko, it might cost you 1,800 rand. The impact of that is immense because you've just demanded 10 tons of carbon to be removed and you've spread it into the ecosystem. Now that merchant might decide to sell back into rands, but that doesn't leave the ecosystem because the next demand signal will take those tokos. And as our user base grows and as our merchant base grows, so does the amount of tokos in circulation. So it doesn't get, the certificate doesn't get created and destroyed with the sale necessarily. Yeah. The demand cycle will only cycle up because we're on a big up tick at the moment, a big up slope. So yeah, I'm doing talks around town. We present around Stellenbosch everywhere. If you want to get me or us to come and talk to any of the communities, I appreciate this as an opportunity to speak to people. Any kind of opportunity to explain what we're doing is great. Again, we're not doing this to, you know, me and the other founders are Joe Pretorius and Neil Schumann. We're doing this to try and change the world, not to create another business that we can exit. Because we've realized, as I said before, we've realized that the purpose is really the thing that matters, not the So every business has to be sustainable. So we charge a 1% transaction fee, which is by far the lowest of any of the payment providers. And merchants pay nothing. Merchants pay no transaction fees until they send money. So every time anyone sends money in the network, it's a 1% transaction fee. So consumers will pay 1%, and we're very open about that. But you know, you've got credit card companies charging 2.5% per transaction, and you've got bank fees, and you've got all these hidden fees all over the place that we don't actually realize sometimes how much that's costing us. We've tried to make it as cheap as possible to reduce the barriers.
Sorry, for any plans to have a payment gateway where you know that transaction happens as people actually, for example, go onto your site and buy something, but the payment gateway is Toko.
Absolutely. I think we're starting to explore all of these potential opportunities. That's certainly one of them, online payment portal, payment gateways. The other opportunities that we're looking at is, and look, we've started with the most complex. The most complex is the transactional, the day-to-day transactional environment. You know, I think if you look at, and we're definitely not a cryptocurrency, but if you look at that, they're solving the kind of the online payment space, but there's no KYC, there's no security in terms of knowing who the two parties are that are transacting. That's hard to do. There's no integration with traditional finance world. That's hard to do. And those are the two things that we've done to differentiate ourselves from any kind of crypto. So everybody in the network is known. So you will be Francois and we'll have your proof of address and your ID. And the merchants that you're transacting with, when you scan their code, you'll see the merchant's name come up. So there's security on both sides.
Awesome.
And that's instant. We don't want this network open to any kind of criminal activity or anything like that. There's anti-money laundering protocols and principles built into the network, which is really important to make sure that people are safe. Our bank is Standard Bank. From that perspective, and then we launched in the transactional environment, which is hard to do because, you know, you're competing against Apple Pay and tapping credit cards and things that people don't think about it because they're so easy. And we've come along and said, hey, you know, think about it and think about the impact of what you're spending, which people often don't necessarily consider. So we've started with the most complex, and we've tried, I think we're in the process of demonstrating that there are enough people who do care and who do appreciate the impact of their spend. And the growth, I think in terms of growth next steps, we've always said we'll go into South Africa at the latter half of this year and then globally very quickly after that into Europe. But we've recently been approached by some of the big retailers and who focus on sustainability. And speaking about how we offer this or how we partner to offer this to the consumer so that they can spend at the 400 stores nationwide. And that's how we'll expand into South Africa, is harnessing the retailers' network. Because building what we've done in Stellenbosch is build our own network of this movement of people passionate about
footwear, right? It's footwear, going to merchants, talking, explaining.
Correct. Correct. So that's definitely the plan is, you know, you need the footwork and you need the solving the complex problem. And then you can try and harness, you can use that as the platform to then solve the other problem, which is, you know, harnessing a network of millions of people who shop at a particular store that now they can do the same thing. But the result of their shopping is removing their annual carbon footprint, which is pretty cool. And yeah, so we're setting up the processes to be able to scale when that eventually happens.
Okay. I want to transition back to your primary job and just explore a little bit. Maybe you can share something about what it's done to, how it's affected your relationships with your family, your children, and so forth, your wife, this internal shift of purpose. So being in a space where, okay, I've got the time, I've got the money now, which people think is the dream and the ultimate, you realize, no, I need purpose and finding something that's huge, that's really massive, and having that purpose and drive and working really hard and making it happen. Can you share something that you've noticed has shifted inside of you because of that?
I think the, I think I'm, I mean, I'm going to be very open here, but I think I'm prouder of myself and I'm happier inside.
Yeah.
Because I'm chasing this thing, which generally means I'm better to be around.
You're not saying great to be around, just better.
Just better, yeah. So coming up a low base here, Franz.
Yeah, yeah. Gotcha.
yeah, I think naturally, if you're happier in your own skin, you just have better energy. You know, if you're dealing with personal stuff and you're kind of thinking, you know, what's my identity, and you have this gnawing unhappiness.
Yeah, why?
Yeah, you pull energy. Yes. I often think about energy givers and energy takers. So you need energy to make yourself feel better, so you have to take it from sources. And I think sometimes that energy exchange, if you're not exuding energy, then it's hard for a partner. I think the question of being present with the kids, in terms of quality versus quantity. Mm. You know, I can be around all the time, but that doesn't mean I'm present.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm like struggling with stuff internally in my head or whatever, I'm not. I think it's just this balance that I certainly haven't solved yet. I don't know if somebody has solved it. Can they please write a book on it? But that balance of like of time. It's at the end of the day, that's the currency that we will all run out of at some point, and that's the most important currency. Is, you know, I'll work late nights, but then get back and read them a story and ask them interesting specific questions about their day, and maybe glean something in that hour that spending a whole day with them I wouldn't have, because I'm not like infinitely or really focusing on being present. So presence doesn't equal being present.
Yes.
I think being around all day doesn't mean that you're going to connect in a valuable way with your children. So that's what I've tried to focus on. Is I do have less time, especially in the early stages of the business, which I hope will balance out when, you know, we solve a couple of problems and we get people to do the things that I'm currently doing. And we reach a kind of a different phase of the business where it's more scalable and we don't have to put so many hours in to get to that result. And then I can get a little bit more work-life balance. But yeah, I do believe in doing the things that give you energy so you can bring that energy home. I think that's what I'm trying to focus on now.
I love it.
My wife has been amazing, completely phenomenal with her support of what we're trying to do. And I think it's because she also believes in what we're trying to do.
Yes.
You know, she speak about it a lot. She is very interested. She's very passionate about it as well. And that helps, you know. If I was starting an insurance company and I just wanted to make more money, or, you know, something that doesn't, not that insurance is bad, but just some kind of fintech company that, if I was just chasing money, I think the question would be, is it worth it?
Yes.
Is it worth giving up your time now and your currency with your kids and all that kind of stuff for just money, you know, that's definitely not worth it. I wouldn't be doing that if it was just that purpose. But I don't know. Have you watched The Lorax, the video, The Lorax, the Dr. Yeah. Seuss
yes,
book?
Yes, yeah. Yes, of course.
Yeah, yeah, a little orange guy.
Yeah.
So when my kids ask me what I do, I say, my wife actually said to them, Daddy's like The Lorax. You know, he's like, he speaks for the trees. You know, it's the easiest way to describe
it. It's beautiful.
The kids. And they're like, awesome. You know, so now they're like interested in Toko. And, you know, they asked me the other day, can we spend it at the coffee shop down the road? And I was like, not yet, but it's coming. And the next week they will be able to. So they can go in and we can do a transaction and I can buy the milkshakes or whatever using Toko and explain the whole thing to them. And that really, really helps. You know, it helps if your family support the purpose because then they can justify time away. Yeah. So
I liked what you said about being, you know, presence doesn't equal being present, and being around really doesn't mean you're available. You know, it's a big difference there. So the quality is really huge. Paul, this has been amazing. Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing all of this. And thank you for what you are doing and attempting. This I will definitely put this out there and get it get it to you so you can share it as well, so people can learn and hear about this as quickly as possible and use all the channels that's available to us. This has been very, very inspiring. I had goosebumps at one stage listening to you talk about what's possible when you shared just going out for a meal and your carbon footprint. That's so profound. That's so profound. So well done. Keep
thank
going.
You, and
thank you. It's a pleasure knowing you and a pleasure sharing this time with you.
Thanks for the time and opportunity. I really appreciate it.
No, you're welcome. It's definitely been the freshest perspective we've had, you know, pun intended. So I hope you have an amazing day.
Thank you so much. You too. Bye.